Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast for the love of the Sox, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, episode 80. This is a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast doing it for the love of the game. I am Nick Borowski, and I'll be bringing in my co-host, Pat Hester, in just a second. I want to thank you guys so much for joining us once again for some Sox chatter. You can find us anywhere you find podcasts. Simply subscribe, and every new episode will come into that inbox. Also, very excited to announce that Good Guys Talk Back is partnering with ShyCitySports.com. We're going to be joining their family. You can find our information, our podcast, at the ShyCitySports.com website. They have some great Chicago content over there, Bulls and Bears, great folks over there. Exciting stuff, Pat Hester, huh?
Yes. It's great to be joining the Shy City Sports family. And, you know, they've got a lot to offer. They've got a lot of content on their site. So please check it out, not only for our stuff, but if you're looking for other podcasts, you can find it there and follow them on Twitter and all that good stuff. Excited to be partnering with those folks.
Yeah, a lot of great Chicago content. So it's pretty awesome. Mr. Hester, we've got some Chicago White Sox stuff to talk about. There's always some rumors that we can get to in a little bit. I do want to talk a Hall of Fame and Mark Burley at some point during this episode. But, you know, news, stuff that, this falls into the category, Pat, of things I never thought I'd have to talk about again. You know, yesterday in the afternoon, even slightly evening maybe, we got word that Carlos Rodon is coming back. The Sox are bringing him back in a one-year, $3 million deal. We can get into where we think he's going to fit, but just your first reactions when you heard this, maybe going from the rumor to the actuality, your thoughts on this Rodon reunion.
Nick, were you a cartoon kid growing up?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, I felt like a cartoon character where the eyes get really bug-eyed and the mouth like goes down like to the waistline and the tongue comes hanging out and you're just not in the expression like you just saw an attractive other cartoon character character. I don't believe what I'm hearing and I don't believe what I'm seeing. You know, it's like a punch in the gut. We were expecting, you know, change and expecting some good news. Mm-hmm. Now we'll dig into where he fits. They're talking about bullpen, you know, fine. But if this is their solution to a starting pitcher, it leaves a little bit more to be, there's more to be desired there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk cartoons, Looney Tunes stuff, think of the anvil on Wile E. Coyote's head. That's how I felt when I was reading this. Rodon's 28. He was a third pick in the 2014 draft. Sox took him third, just ahead of Kyle Schwarber in the 2014 draft. And boy, he has struggled just to stay healthy and you know, not to mention productivity. He threw 120 innings in 2018. His high mark is 165 in 2016. He's got a 4.14 career ERA. And the last real memory of Rodon for most Sox fans, all Sox fans, is the Oakland playoff series, when he just looked awful. And that came after the Cleveland series where we got swept, needed to win in Cleveland. And we talked about this when it actually happened months ago. Should he even been in that game? No. He just looked very uncomfortable coming in for relief. He got shelled. And I thought that was the end of him. You know, he was non-tendered on December 2nd. And I thought, okay, you know what? There was some potential there, but as we have found out with a lot of our first round draft picks over the last 5-6 years, there's potential, but it just doesn't work out. And he couldn't stay healthy. I mean, several arm issues over the last few years. I was, you know, happy to see us move away from him. And I thought maybe he would find life with a team that was maybe rebuilding and just needed some arms, maybe Detroit or, you know, I even heard the Cubs were taking a look at him, which I felt bad for the Cubs. I felt like, oh wow, you're looking at Samardzija and Rodon this week. That sucks. That's a real damn shame for you guys. Sorry you're in that situation. And here we go pick him up. So I don't know, Pat. I feel like taking steps back here.
It feels like, here's what I would equate like a pitcher, not any pitcher like a Carlos Rodon, when you say, well, he's got such great stuff. And all you ever hear about is the stuff. Well, he can't do it. It's almost like a quarterback in football where you hear, well, he's got the arm strength. He can throw it through a keyhole, but he just can't do it. So I feel like front offices and coaches fall in love with guys because of their stuff. He might have great stuff, but he can't get people out. So I'd rather take a guy that can get it done, and we're going to talk about Mark Burley, a guy like Dallas Keuchel, who doesn't have the overwhelming stuff, but he knows how to pitch. The guy doesn't know how to pitch.
And that's what it comes down to. We've discussed it over the years on this podcast, and I know folks listening have probably discussed it with coworkers, friends, family, other Sox fans. It's the difference between a thrower and a pitcher, someone who's just trying to blow you away with their stuff, and someone who knows how to pitch, who can mix things up and who can be good at mixing things up. Like they've got their breaking stuff. They've got their corner stuff. They're keeping you off balance. And I think essentially where with Rodon's injuries, I think that's what he's going to have to be. He's going to have to be a Dallas Keuchel type of lefty, keeping you off balance. And God bless Steve Stone. He's a great follow. I love listening to Steve Stone. But, you know, on social media, on Twitter, what he's saying about Carlos Rodon is Ethan Katz. You know, he's going to be the guy. Nothing against Don Cooper, but Ethan Katz, young guy, tapped into what's going on with pitchers right now. You can't fix a guy that can't stay healthy. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's what we're coming down to with this guy. And so where is he going to fit? Is he going to be competing in Arizona for a number five spot for a fifth starter? Or are you going to see him, in the bullpen, you know, long relief, which did not look good for him when he did come back late last season? He looked really out of sorts. And somebody who is going to be bobbing and weaving and hitting corners and, you know, relying on a slider, and he's not going to have that mid-90s, high-90s stuff. I just don't think he is. Is that the guy you want coming out of a bullpen?
Well, it was funny because I almost, like, did a spit take, you know, when I saw this tweet. Somebody said, well, he could potentially platoon with Hendricks as a closer, and I thought,
That has to be a joke.
A platoon. We didn't pay $54 million for an elite closer to have him platoon with anybody. I know he's not going to close every single game, but and maybe that's potentially your definition.
That has to be a joke. There's no way. If anybody, you're going to use Crochet to maybe platoon with a righty lefty, just nasty stuff. But
or Bomber. I mean, or anybody else.
You know, I look at maybe Rodon as a guy that you know if you have the roster flexibility, you have him around, you know, to just do long relief. Like if we've got a starter that is just having a rough outing, and you need somebody to go, you know, three plus, maybe four innings to help eat some of that, so we don't tax our bullpen. He's the guy that you might want to go to. Gio Gonzalez was being used for towards the end of this 2020 season. That's what maybe I could see. But honestly, man, if we were to make bets here, I don't even think he makes it out of spring training, Rodon. I hate to say it. I'm not wishing him ill. I just, like, we have the sample size. Yeah. And I, as a Sox fan, boy, do I hope I hope I'm wrong. I want to see him do well, and I want the Sox to do well with him. But I don't have a lot of hope for Rodon.
No, so it doesn't seem to be there.
You know, he's basically his career's on the line. And there's a lot of guys that when their career's on the line, they step up and they know that this is it for me. Make or break. I have to perform here. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if he can get out of Arizona. I don't think he does. I say they release him and they say, you know what, that was a fun experiment. We got guys that really shown some stuff. They might be really surprised with what Kopech has done and Cease and others. And, you know, we can't waste a roster spot on you, Rodon. I don't know.
That's the optimistic side, though, Nick, and you mentioned it there, is maybe it's the Ethan Katz effect. Maybe it's he wasn't stretched out enough last year for what he was asked to do. And this new mentality of being motivated to this is you're basically pitching for your career, and whether your future is with the Chicago White Sox or it's with another team, you've got to prove it. So you're on a prove it deal. You're trying to scrap and maybe, you know, you talk to, you know, the rest of the guys in your pitching room that have had struggles and now found success. One of them being your new closer, Liam Hendricks, who's gone through a lot of, you know, he's out of options before he turned his career around. So, I know, and again, it all boils down to, and you've talked about it enough, and we'll move on, but it boils down to you can be as motivated as you want, but if your arm and your body doesn't allow you to be on the mound, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. This all comes with the financial talk, right? And earlier this past week, you know, Bob Nightingale, who's a Sox whisperer, and we feel like he's really a mouthpiece for Jerry Reinsdorf, because Jerry Reinsdorf won't get in front of a camera. He won't do an interview. And you're just not going to see that happening, even though you want to hear from Reinsdorf, from him, instead of throwing these other folks, in front of a camera or in a microphone. And Bob Nightingale, you know, says that the Sox are financially tapped because of the Hendricks signing. Don't expect any other big signings. You know, don't expect Nelson Cruz. Don't expect this. That's it for them. And then they go and they do the 1 year, $3 million for Rodon. And we're hearing maybe there's another move that could be made for a backup catcher or another arm to compete for that fifth rotation spot. But again, then I go back to, well, then why nickel and dime that? Why not just go after Quintana for the $8 million? Was it just because when we offered, he wasn't ready? He thought there was going to be a better deal around? I would have much rather had Quintana than having to try to really fix Rodon.
Yeah. To me, Nick, it seems like the three-headed monster that is Jerry, Rick, and Kenny, they hate that anything about Sox news gets put out on Twitter. They feel like it ruins their negotiating power. And then they get fed up and they call Bob and they go, oh, squash this story. We're going to show everybody that stay out of White Sox business again. It's like, we'll show you. And it's all your fault because you tweet about these things and they ruin our negotiating power. Now we missed out on this guy because we had a sweetheart deal that felt good for us, but now we got another better deal because it got out on Twitter. It's like, geez, Louise, you guys are such a
buddy. Yeah. No, I mean, welcome to 2021. I mean, for the last 5-6 years, I felt like definitely the last 3 years, you know, information gets out. It is tough to keep things quiet. And this financially tapped nonsense, where it really gets your blood boiling. And I'm not telling anybody how to be a fan. You can be a Sox fan or any fan, however way you want. You know, you can take this information. You know, am I going to go to games? If I can go to games, absolutely. Am I going to buy the merchandise? Absolutely. Am I going to stand in line for an hour to get, you know, Tim Anderson bat flip bobblehead if I can? Absolutely. Because I'm deranged that way. Like, it's in my blood. But I could still, like, question this, you know, with just, okay, so why is this such a big deal, this financially tapped business? Is we're almost getting to the 2-year anniversary where we miss out on Machado. Okay. They try to have a real sweet deal, and it wasn't the way Machado wanted to play it. Machado wanted guaranteed money. We weren't willing to go, or, you know, Jerry wasn't willing to go that route. And let me read you the quote, Pat. This is from 2 years ago, February 2019. This is from Hunt. The money will be spent. It might not be spent this offseason, but it will be spent at some point. This isn't money sitting around waiting to just accumulate interest. It's money trying to be deployed to put us in best position to win some championships. Do you feel, Pat, as a fan, you know, not knowing all the nuts and bolts of the financial world, which we never really will know, the books and everything, do you feel like the money has been spent to put ourselves in to win multiple championships?
They've spent money smartly on their own guys, but to make you feel like you're pushing your chips in and spending money aggressively on that last piece or two that you need, to almost give it a no doubt that we are here and we're going to go deep in the playoffs and possibly win this thing. No, I feel like we're still at the point of, well, we'll see. We don't really want to another couple million for this guy. Nah, we don't want to do that. That's not where we want to go.
Exactly.
Unless there's just not the guy out there that they feel like we have to put our money here because it's going to make or break us. Maybe they don't feel that way about Nelson Cruz. Maybe they don't want. Maybe they just don't feel like this is money well spent on a 40-year-old DH. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Hey, I agree with that. I agree with that, and I agree with, you know, overpaying for Quintana, but I don't think $8 million is overpaying for that guy. Yeah. But you and I both know that the Bauer situation could completely erase all this conversation. You and I both agree, as everybody else agrees, like that is the power move. There's been some power move. Grandal was a huge move. Hendricks was a huge move. But they weren't these blockbuster money has been spent now. You know, here was the pile of money we were going to give Machado. Now we're giving it to a pitcher. We can get it. Well, do you want to spend that much for 1 year? I don't know. I do know pitching is going to win the championships, plural. Mm-hmm. Maybe they haven't felt like there was a guy. Machado seemed to be a guy for them. They threw money at Wheeler last offseason, and that didn't work out. It sounds like Jock Peterson turned down a deal that the Sox gave them or offered him earlier this offseason, turned it down, and he ended up signing with the Cubs for, I think, less.
Yeah.
Which they're a love affair with Jack Peterson. I have no idea why that has been a long thing. So when you and I talk, Pat, and we talk with other Sox fans and maybe new Sox fans that are just starting to really, you know, follow this team a little bit more closely, they hear that term money will be spent, or they hear it in a sarcastic way. That's what we're referring to. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, when is it? And I thought for sure, you know, here we are anticipating 2021. I thought like they would have found something in the last few off seasons that could have been that final piece. Is this team great and stacked? Absolutely. I cannot wait to watch this team. They're missing some depth. They're missing, a backup catcher, a proven backup catcher. They're missing a quality DH, but there's a lot of talent on this team. I like what we have. But if you're going to revisit that quote, and this is about the time, every around February, every around Sox Fest, shortly after early February, here comes that quote. It's like, well, where is it, man? When is that going to happen? Who is worthy of you spending that money? I don't get it.
Well, this is the nice part about being a fan of this team right now, is because there's people like you and I, and there's fans all over Twitter right now holding this team accountable. I was listening to the radio this past week, as I always do, to ESPN 1000, and they were talking about the return of Pat Fitzgerald to the Wildcats, and I think it was Jonathan Hood that said, "Oh, that's fantastic," but No Wildcat fan ever holds anybody accountable up there. They're just happy they make a bowl and maybe win a couple games. They just know that they're it's just like, okay, it's all happy and we love Fitz, and nobody ever holds their feet to the fire, or no fan base ever holds them accountable to anything. It's just okay, we're the happy little Wildcats.
Sure.
I love that we hold our team accountable even when things are great. And maybe they're not great yet. Maybe they're just really good right now. We've got a lot
good,
of young
not
talent.
Great.
Yeah,
good,
we got
not great.
We've got some fantastic young talent. We've got a very interesting new pitching coach. Some returning vets and guys that have got some awards now.
It's a good mix.
And then you've got the Crypt Keeper, keeping holding the helm here, leading the way. Really excited to be here.
Hall of Fame baseball person.
Hall of Fame baseball man. And so there's a lot of good, but I love that we hold this team accountable and are not satisfied with where we're at. And they shouldn't be. And let's also remember the offseason isn't complete yet. And
it's
maybe
not.
maybe it's that deal that they've been able to keep in-house and under wraps and the hush-hush stuff that we haven't heard about. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, the person I want to talk to, though, is this Hector Gomez. Every year it's like, something big is going to happen. Get ready for it. Whatever he provides
it's
is
a joke.
Nonsense.
But there's a lot of, Go ahead.
Bob Nightingale, I'll tell you, he is like the Debbie Downer of all of anybody in as far as this White Sox fan. I think he just loves to, it's almost like he lives for it. It's like, Jerry, you got some bad news for me to share? Oh, this is going to be great. Watch me squash everybody's dreams.
it's that's the thing. It's like you can follow so much these days because there's so many avenues to sniff around leads and rumors and be careful what you wish for, because the more you follow, unfortunately, the more it breaks your heart. Where if you just didn't pay attention, it's just like, okay, let me know who breaks from Arizona. Let me know what that lineup's going to look like, that roster's going to look like on April 1st. And I'm not wired that way. And I know there's a lot of other Sox fans, but if you're listening to this podcast, you're not wired that anyway. You're eating, breathing, and sleeping and dreaming Chicago White Sox. Speaking of, holding ownership accountable, this past week, the Trib, ran an article marking 40 years since Reinsdorf took over, 40 years since he bought this team. And what has there really been to show for? It's the World Series, of course, in 2005, but what is it, only 6 playoff appearances? Something like that. And this team that they've been building since 2016, the fall of 2016, is not built to win just a couple divisions. That's not what we had anticipated in that. I don't think, hopefully, I get it. Business is business, and Reinsdorf maybe doesn't really, if we win, we win, but this is a business for me. Han knows better, and that's where I wonder if Han is just frustrated beyond belief, knowing that here we are. We're just not trying to win the division a couple of years. We're just not trying to get to the AL championship. We want to not only win a World Series, hopefully multiple, but be in a few World Series during this time,
Yeah. I can't speak for Rick Hahn. I'm sure there's things he's been wanted to do, but let's not make it out that Rick Hahn is got a bad gig. All right. He works for an owner that's extremely loyal. He's probably never going to be fired, or it would be a change in ownership or Jerry step away before it would be a firing of any kind. I'm sure he collects a pretty fancy, large size paycheck. Yeah. So what? He doesn't get everything he wants all the time. I'm not going to feel bad for Rick Hahn and say, "Oh, free Rick Hahn and let him go somewhere else." No, I think Rick Hahn's just fine. I think he'll be all right.
So the guy that has been referenced in this financially tapped situation because of Liam Hendricks, the Sox are just handcuffed to make any more moves. Hendricks doing some good in the community this past week. I'm a resident of Bridgeport, just a couple blocks from the stadium, and love this neighborhood. And Hendricks partnering up with first responders, with the local fire department and bringing meals to them from local businesses. Pretty cool to see Hendricks and his wife doing that, Pat.
Yeah, he's been here about a whole minute, and I'm sure there's players on this team and all teams that do some great work, but I just think it was fantastic to see that story that went out that White Sox charity shared on social media. Mm-hmm. And, what a way to ingratiate yourself to the South Side and get take care of some of the first responders. And you and I have a very good friend that's a firefighter, and we hold those folks near and dear to our hearts, the things that they do and putting their lives at risk. So good on Liam Hendricks, good on and his wife as well for getting involved. Yep. And not only the first responders, but the local businesses and the local restaurants. It won't be a one and done type of thing. It'll be a continuing thing with him as being as charitable as he is. So that's why I wanted to, we talked about it before the podcast. You know, sometimes we get mired in these negative stories and the ownership and all that stuff and spending of money. We got to also look at the good that the team does, that the players do. It's not all bad.
Tim Anderson, I mean, he continually does so much for the community. Abreu's got his stuff going on. There's a lot of great stuff, and Chicago White Sox Charities is an awesome organization. There's a ton of good, and I'm stoked. I cannot wait for this season, but I think, you know, that's when you love something and you're so passionate about something, that doesn't mean you can't critique it, frustrated that it can't be a little bit better.
The financially tapped thing, Nick, and anybody can do a quick Google search of what Jerry Reinsdorf is worth, and it's $1.5 billion. The normal person, the normal fan that can just easily look at that, and the people that go and have 9-to-5s, and they look at that, mm-hmm. and they hear someone that's worth $2.5 billion, whatever it was with a B.
Enough, at the end of it.
And they say financially tapped. People like you and I don't understand how that can be possible. I know it's your assets that make up what your net worth is, right? It's not like he's got that money sitting in a vault somewhere and he's Scrooge McDuck and he's taking a bath in it.
That should be leaked. Maybe it shouldn't. You know, if you have that video, don't leak it.
That's the kind of stuff as an organization. Don't say financially tapped because you're people that are going through a pandemic and really having a hard time making ends meet.
It's the optics that this organization gets themselves into sometimes. Sometimes they just can't get out of their way.
Stop saying that. Big business that say they're financially tapped or they're strapped and they can't do this. And even the Cardinals ownership recently said something about baseball isn't a very good moneymaker. Just shut up.
Yeah.
Just shut up and own your teams and collect your millions of dollars and just get out of my face with this financially tapped business.
Yeah. Wanted to jump just slightly ahead on this to the Hall of Fame stuff, because I know you and I have got some strong opinions on kind of what went on recently. Folks have been following this. Nobody was elected to the Hall of Fame for the first time since 1960. Mark Burley, though, is going to stay on the ballot. He received 44 votes, 11%, which is enough to keep him on the ballot. I don't know which topic you wanted to hit first, Pat. The nonsense about the Hall of Fame, or, you know, is Mark Burley eventually going to be a Hall of Fame?
Let's get the nonsense of baseball as a league. Now, again, it's Baseball Writers of America. And it's like if you ever wrote about baseball in your life, you get a Hall of Fame vote. So that's ridiculous.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And the Hall of Fame itself has nothing to do with Major League Baseball. It's its own separate entity. So they're mutually exclusive. But the fact that Major League Baseball every year doesn't have at least three players go in to celebrate the game, to sell the game, to sell the history and the great players that you've had come through is a travesty. It's a travesty in terms of sport. It's not a real life travesty, but it's beyond ridiculous that there's nobody. And I'm not saying that, you know, Mark Burley is a lockdown Hall of Famer. I think he is, but you know, if he never made it, that's fine. You could have arguments, you know, that would maybe prove that he isn't. But The fact that there's nobody going in is beyond my understanding.
So I look at it, well, it's ridiculously subjective. You know, it's writers that I get the impression are just trying to protect the game that they knew growing up. And, you know, obviously every 10 to 15 years, you have a new crop of generational writers. And well, in my day, you know, that wasn't Hall of Fame worthy. And that didn't happen. And, you know, these are my standards. Nowhere is there written any rules of, like, you have to hit these numbers to get into the Hall of Fame. This has all just been conjured up over the years, you know, 500 home runs, 3,000 hits, X amount of strikeouts. And, you know, I think what happened recently with the whole Curt Schilling stuff, you know, the type of person that Curt Schilling is, his views, very outspoken about a lot of different things, non-baseball related. And, you know, hey, if you want to keep Curt Schilling out because, you know, he's a nut and he's got all these different ideas, well, then, you know, the Hall of Fame is going to have to write some kind of rules. I think Buster Olney even talked about this on social media. Hey, you're going to have some guidelines. Like, if somebody makes disparaging comments about this, that, or the other, it gets too political, or I don't know how you're going to police that, but it really just seems kind of gross sometimes to just say, okay, you did what you did. I'm going to judge you, Barry Bonds or Pete Rose or whatever. And you're forever going to have to eat that. And you're forever going to have to be sitting in purgatory, because we as human beings, because we are writers, we're not going to let you out. A lot of that is just kind of ridiculous to me. And to not have someone in the Hall of Fame to grow the game a little bit more. Yeah, like, you're right, Pat. And I mean, and this isn't the only sport. You could probably look at the NBA and the NFL, but I feel like MLB is that sport that just everybody lives on these. In, you know, hey, you know, I'm the one that's making up the rules now, and you can't do this. Everybody's on a high horse, and get off yourself, man. Get off yourself. This will never be corrected as long as human beings are voting, because there are no qualifications, which, you know, leads me to the Burley stuff. I think Burley is a Hall of Famer, you know, but he's not a Hall of Famer right now because he didn't play on the East Coast in New York or LA or on the West Coast. He didn't get constant national attention, and he wasn't, you know, a certain generation of voter, a dominant strikeout pitcher, you know, that power pitcher that racked up Cy Youngs and was just like a Verlander or a Clemens or a Randy Johnson. You know, I'm going to go through his numbers in a moment, but your immediate thoughts about where Burley stands right now and his future on the Hall of Fame ballots.
Yeah, just unfortunately, he didn't have enough October time, because he didn't have enough time with
ESPN time, SportsCenter time, too.
The broader scope of the sports writer that's voting on these things, they're gonna remember the times they covered this pitcher in the playoffs and that pitcher in the playoffs and that pitcher in the World Series. Yeah. So you're gonna look at a Mark Burley and go, I have to look up Mark Burley and who he was and what he did as a non-White Sox fan or a non-Chicago writer. Which is unfortunate. Yeah. And then, unfortunately for Mark, after he left, you know, us, he went and pitched in Toronto. Had he gone
in Miami. Yeah.
Had he gone and went to more prominent organizations?
The Red Sox or the Yankees or the Dodgers.
If he was part of another power team in like you said, on the East Coast, that got a lot of pub, and maybe he wasn't the dominant pitcher on that staff, but he helped the team to another championship and he got a lot more face time with the media. I think he'd be in the Hall of Fame, but unfortunately, go ahead.
Let me throw you the numbers. I mean, he played 16 years, 214 and 160 record wise. I mean, that's damn good as a starting pitcher. That is damn good. 14 straight years. This is the one that is going to get him into the Hall. 14 straight years with 200-plus innings. He had 198 innings in 2015, so it was almost 15 straight years. Four complete games in 2015 towards the end of his career. You are never going to see that again. because no. that's not how the game operates. You have pitchers that go maybe five innings, maybe six innings, and then here comes that crafted bullpen that mm-hmm. was devised in the offseason with your seven, eight, nine guys. You are not going to see a guy put that log that many innings because also these contracts that are going in, they don't want to waste the arms of some of these guys. And that's the crazy thinking. Burley was a special, special guy with that. And, yeah. you know, a no-hitter, a perfect game, a World Series champion, five-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glove. You know, he wasn't a strikeout pitcher. He didn't have dominant stuff. He didn't play on the big stage. He wasn't a household name. But those numbers are damn good. They just are. That's a solid career.
Yeah.
More than solid.
And what you're going to have to do, Nick, to plead that case more is find the comp. Who's the comp that's in the Hall of Fame now that is to Mark Burley? Because if there isn't one in there and all the comps that you have are guys that are not in the Hall of Fame, that's going to be detrimental to him. So yeah, I don't know,
Cy Youngs, and I don't know if he ever really got high in the Cy Young voting because that's what he was. He wasn't this dominant. He logged innings. You know, he started games. He went to the mound. He had 30-plus starts several times during his career. I just think eventually, like we've seen with a lot of other players, you know, I can think of Tim Raines and Harold Baines. During their opportunities, it just took a while until they got an audience that, you know, either was convinced or they eventually said, yeah, you know what? Look at this guy's numbers. You know, mm-hmm. look what he was able to do during that era. And it's just going to take some time. It's going to take some time, but I he will get in. And people are going to argue about that event, you know, well, because it's so subjective. You could make mm-hmm. an argument about anything. I just personally feel like those numbers, yeah, but you're right. You got to find some comps.
Yeah, for him. And that's why ultimately, Nick, I would love to see it because he's one of my favorite players ever. I don't see it ever happening.
That's fine.
And it's not because I believe he shouldn't be. It's just because I believe that there's not this guy's in. So Mark, you know, same player, he should get in. And he doesn't have the flashy pitching stats that people will point to. It's the 200 innings. I don't think it's gets people excited about putting people in the Hall of Fame. Just my opinion. I would hope that I'm wrong, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think you need to get some folks that understand the game, the pitching aspect that aren't enamored with the flashy strikeout numbers and the flashy high win totals and the trophies and the Cy Young. You have to get somebody that understands the nuts and bolts of what this guy did, you know, mm-hmm. what he did with his glove, what he did with his arm. And you tick off those personal accolades, perfect game, no hitter, World Series champ, multiple All-Stars. Come on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, couple things before we head out on this episode, Pat. La Stella has signed with the Giants, so we don't have to hear about that garbage anymore of him coming to the Sox. And Wainwright goes back to St. Louis. No surprise, but it was worthy, you know, of us, you know, talking about it last episode.
Mm-hmm.
We still don't have a proven DH. You know, is it Vaughn? Is it going to be Vaughn? Are they going to try to use Zach Collins as well as a DH, which maybe they're going to sign a backup catcher so we're not too hurt with having Collins and Grandal in the lineup at the same time. But what is going on with the DH here for us?
It's amazing how hard it is to sign a guy that all he does is hit. We haven't been able to.
Is Nomar Mazara coming back?
Oh, good Lord, Nick. I'm just going to run out in the snow naked that if that happens. I mean, please, for the love of everything good and pure. And I just, that'll be it. I just bury me and wake me up in the spring. Because if we're doing a podcast at some point.
reminds me of that Chris Farley clip on the old SNL where he took that like that Dayquil or whatever that knocked him out. Hibernol. Take some of that and just wake me up on April 1st when the season starts. Yeah.
Oh my God, I've slept through all so many flus and colds and COVID got curved. Geez, Louise, if we're talking about Nomar Mazara, let's not even I haven't seen anything like that. Have you? Tell me, please tell me you haven't seen that. at all.
No, but when I was looking back at the Rodon stuff, you know, Han went on the record in early December and said, you know, Manzara and Rodon, you know, non-tendered, but we're going to stay in contact with both of their representatives and just see how things go throughout the offseason. So they obviously have kept in contact with Rodon's people, and he's coming back. I have not heard for sure anything, but the fact that they said that about Rodon and Mazzara, I hope not. But you're right. How come we can't find a legitimate DH? Well, we can. We just don't want to spend the money for it. So then you're going to throw Vaughn out there without any major league experience, and I'm sure he's going to do fine, but he's going to scuffle, and it's going to be a long season. And then if you try to platoon with Zach Collins, here's a guy that's had only 100 at-bats in the majors, 3 home runs and a 167 average. Now, he does not – I mean, he hasn't had opportunities. So what are you going to look – like, hey, let's give Collins the opportunities because I want to prove this guy wrong. Or are you more in the camp of once this guy gets opportunities, we're going to see really what Collins can do offensively?
Boy, I feel like we've been hearing and talking about a Zach Collins for a long, long time. I think this is it for him. You know, as far as this is his shot. If you want to sell me on, we need to get this guy some real major league experience and a lot of innings. Let him be up here and scuffle and come out of it and prove himself. You could sell me on that. I would sign up for that before I'd sign up for bringing someone like a Mazzara back on some type of ludicrous deal. I'd like to give the guy a shot. I feel like they've given him plenty of opportunities, and he's kind of shrunk whenever he's had the opportunity. And Vaughn, okay, you can sell me on that a little bit, but I just feel like either one of those guys aren't great options as far as a DH. Maybe Vaughn, not because of the talent, just because I think it's a little too early to put that on him right now.
And, a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure for this year. Yeah.
And I feel like we're getting to the point where they're comfortable with the idea of platooning guys. You've got a platoon situation already set up in right field. And I'll tell you what, the situation in right field, though, even though it's a platoon, is better than what it was with Mazzara starting every day, because we clamored for more angle. You're going to get more angle. Yeah. And I think Eaton is a better player all around than an Omar Mazzara, even though he's not going to hit for the potential power.
If he can stay healthy, yeah. Sure.
So I feel better about that, but that's already a platoon situation. You're talking about platoon situations with your starting pitching and maybe even platooning. It's like, that's a platoon. And then what are you doing at backup catcher? It's like, I feel like there's too much platoon talk going on. Can we have some more solid solutions here? I don't know.
I think there's still a lot of time. I mean, we're sitting here almost, it's early February almost, tomorrow's February 1st, and we've got 2 weeks really until catchers and pitchers are reporting. It's exciting stuff. A lot of things could emerge, in Arizona. Hopefully everything's going on time. There's a lot of question marks, and you're right. There could be some deals that are still made. We're hoping depth is key. Maybe you want to have some tryouts and just have guys competing against one another to see who's going to break. But boy, there still are a lot of question marks.
60 days, brother. 60 days till I believe opening day. I saw
April 1st. Sox in LA. I cannot wait, man. All right. I think we're going to start wrapping up, Pat. It's always a pleasure, sir, to talk White Sox with you on such a cold, snowy weekend here in Chicago.
Yes. Yeah. Stay safe out there if you're out there shoveling snow. Yeah. Don't be a hero.
I love that. Want to just remind you, very excited that we are part of the ShyCitySports.com family. You can find some info at their website, along with a bunch of other great Chicago podcasts. But you also can find us anywhere you find podcasts, as usual. Subscribe, and every new episode comes into that inbox. Find us on Twitter, @GoodGuysTB, and our Facebook page. This is a local, fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, doing it just for the love of the Sox. Thank you so much once again for joining us here for episode 80. For Pat Hester, I am Nick Morawski.